1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series.
This time Manning going deep for Beckham Jr. Can he catch it? He did!
So Tom, this week, much like I did last week when the Giants played in the playoffs, I largely refrained from texting you in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you like a couple pictures, a couple texts. I sent you the Barstool Lots of Game Left hoodie when they went down 14-0 in like the first 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But like before, I was saving this conversation for the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more I watched that game and the more I watched how the Eagles were kind of able to just shut down everything the Giants have done well to get them to this point where they're playing in the divisional round, coming off being one of the worst teams in the league last year, I was thinking that America may have over-romanticized the Giants this year, and that may have ultimately been their downfall. I think it was clear by the end of the first quarter of the Giants game against the Eagles in the divisional round this week, which is one of the four playoff games that was on this weekend, that these are not two teams that are in the same weight class. This is this is Mike Tyson fighting Rocky Balboa. Like, this is they're not in the same weight class. And you kind of saw it in the regular season. I mean, there was their game at the end of the year was close, but the other one was almost as big of a decimating for the Giants as it was this game. But my number one question is, like, A, how did you feel going into this game? I know we talked a little bit about it last week. Mm-hmm. And then B, how surprising was it to watch the Eagles just easily dismantle the Giants this week?
Yeah.
And I'll give you the floor for a while on that, because it is your postmortem episode. I got my big postmortem episode. So all yours, buddy.
Yeah. So I agree and I disagree with your statement that the Giants were like overly romanticized for one. Like, well, listen, they were overly romanticized. However, like you said, this team was still, like, our Super Bowl was kind of that Vikings game, you know, like in all, how could I say this, in a more realistic perspective, right? Given the Giants roster, who we have now, my attitude going into this game was I want to rip Philly's face off, as I think is the only proper way to be as a fan. I mean, obviously you could be nervous that you're facing the one seed, all that stuff, and that's there, but you got to go in there regardless and give it your best shot. And that's what you want as a fan, and that's how you want the players thinking too. So that was where my head was at. That mentality went away pretty quickly. And I think that's what Philly's mission was to kind of, you know, if you saw it in the first game against Minnesota, that right off the bat, the Giants got momentum. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that is like, if you give them a little bit of momentum and a little bit of confidence, they just build off of that. However, the opposite, which is what Philly did, if you just stifle it from the beginning and kind of keep on that, you know, you could kind of keep them at a arm's length, and the Giants will keep coming at you like an angry little third grader, but the, like, you kind of like can keep them at bay that way. So that's basically how my head was at going into the game. At about 14-0, I was like, you know what? Like, I know there's a lot of game left. I know you sent me that text, but I was like, you know what? The vibes aren't right. Listen, we got here, which is like, not to, you know, moral victories or anything, but I didn't think the Giants were even going to sniff the playoffs this year. A lot of great developments came out of this season. And I always like to view the positives on the season versus the negatives. I mean, like, we were supposed to get blown out by Philly. I think we were 7.5 underdogs against them. And you buy into, you know, it's hard to beat a team three times, or it's a division game in the playoffs. Anything can happen, but, you know, Philly's a good team. They're coached well. They have players at every position. They played like a one seed. And they did what they had to do, basically. Did it suck getting killed that badly? Yeah, sure. But it didn't hurt as bad because we were playing with house money the entire time anyway. Mm-hmm. So all of the like banter from Philadelphia and their fans, like, I get it. Troll your rival as much as you want. Even though, like, trolling's not really my thing, but I mean, you did what you're supposed to do. Congratulations. You beat the second lowest seed in the playoffs in the NFC. And they did their job. Giants, you know, they just couldn't really get anything going anywhere. I can't really, like, it's the same bell that I've been ringing all year. It's like they need to add it at certain positions and at skill. You look around this league at, and especially the other teams in the playoffs, and you look at their locker rooms, and there's probably like a good 4 or 5 teams that are filled out on every level, and they're the contenders for the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
at least now and in the near future. And that's where I want the Giants to get. I don't want there to be like, yeah, the defense is good, but the linebackers are a little meh. No, I want to see them improve personnel at every level. And they got some decisions to make this offseason with Daniel Jones and Saquon, and which I think, like, you have to bring those back, because basically your entire offense is on free agency right now. And we'll see how they view the quarterback position for the Giants. But I want to give a lot of credit to Dable for, I don't think it's a coincidence that Dable's the offensive coordinator last year for the Bills, and Josh Allen has a career year. And then he comes over to New York and Daniel Jones has a career year. That's not a coincidence for me. I love him. I love his support that he has for all New York teams. He was at the Ranger game the day before the game, out there, you know, banging the drum, which led it to a lot of the hype as well. You know, there was, and I love that stuff. So, to put a bow on it, you did America over romanticize the Giants? Sure. But who doesn't love an underdog? And, I don't think there's any malice there for wanting the Giants to win. It's plus, like, I don't think anyone outside of Philadelphia likes anything Philadelphia.
Sure.
So, I think that plays into it too, but, yeah, stinks with how the season ended, but, I'm much more excited about the Giants going into next year at this point than I thought I would be at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it front to back, that you obviously can't call the season a failure by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it felt really like we just weren't seeing this team for who they actually were all season. The Eagles are not the Vikings, even though that's the one and the two seed. That's a team that really knows how to expose weaknesses in a team. And I think part of it was that the Giants played last week and the Eagles didn't. And I think America, in a way, kind of cooled down on the Eagles a little bit because they had the bye week. Sure. And there's a lot more going on in the NFC. And it just seemed like a perfect storm of there's enough smoke and mirrors in the way to make you believe, especially the cherry on top, this being a division game, which are usually close no matter how good or bad the teams are, no matter how big the talent discrepancy, division games usually come down to a possession or two. that being the cherry on top, and then the rest of the circumstances that led to this was just, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. Like, I'm not saying the Giants are overhyped by any means. Like, they do a lot of things well. But to say that they had a chance to beat past, to go past the Eagles and get to the NFC Championship game, that ceiling might have been a little bit too high, even off the rip.
For sure. For sure. And like, I'd be lying if it wasn't for just me being locked out of my DraftKings account. I would have put a little bit of money on Giants with the points.
Yep.
In this, no doubt. In this last game here. I'm not lying that I, or I'm not saying that I was, you know, not surprised whatsoever that we went out there and got blown out. Not at all. I thought they would like at least keep it close, but it really was a different team out there. And I think, you know, the only difference that I see is that the Eagles were out there on the other sideline and not the Vikings. Mm-hmm. So I want the Giants out there in the future competing with anybody that's on the other sidelines, not just like a fraud three seed.
Sure.
You know, so great foundation, I think, that they set this year. And like, I want to see them build on it. Like I said before, it's the only way you can look at this season, I think, in my opinion.
So coming off a season where you're definitely further along where you wanted to be, but the season still ends like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach this offseason? Like, I'm legitimately curious how Dable and the GMs and everyone in charge of like conditioning and personnel and all that, how do you even assess what this team was? Like, there's no denying that this is maybe the best single season franchise turnaround we've seen in a very long time. But also, you got absolutely rear-ended by a division opponent in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So, like, where does that take you exactly? I don't even know the answer to that.
I think, again, it goes down to the personnel. I think the right philosophy is in the building, the right coaching staff. There's a few key positions that I think they've figured out, and they have a lot of players that they need to re-sign and or restructure their contracts to keep them in the building. And I think that's really where it looks. I think they have to look at their personnel, because I think that's the biggest problem. It's they don't have the championship personnel yet all throughout the roster. They're missing the X factor guys, the playmakers. You know, you look at it like any team that was in the playoffs this past weekend. You look at their offenses and they have at least two guys that you're like, fuck, if they get the ball in their hands,
mm-hmm.
You know, Giants, you really only got Saquon and even, you know, Saquon gets it. He had a good year, not saying that, but I mean, the Giants do have issues with the offensive line every once in a while. So again, I think you in the offseason, I think you sign Daniel Jones, maybe you franchise tag him. I think Barkley takes a bit of a hometown discount to stay, given he hasn't had the knockout career that everyone expected. He's had injuries, and he wants to stay in New York. That's well and out in the public that he wants to stay. So I believe the Giants offered him a $12 million a year contract for 4 years, I believe, which he turned down. So I'm expecting him to get somewhere around like 16, 18 million a year around there, which I think is fair for, I mean, he's your whole offense right now. What else are you going to do? And then other than that, we need a receiver. We need to shore up the offensive line a little bit, and we need to re-sign Dexter.
Gotcha.
So quite a bit of off season stuff that has to happen, both free agency, you know, we've seen drafts turn around franchises with, you know, New Orleans a few years ago. They drafted great. They hit on three guys and they were key players and they were a really formidable team in the NFC. So, yeah, I'd love to see. I'm really excited for this draft and more so than I've been excited in many years in the past.
Well, there you have the Giants postmortem. can't say it was unexpected, but also the fact that it's almost February and Tom is just now getting his football postmortem episode, that is pretty damn crazy. And I think if you had to put a moniker on the Giants season front to back from the first game to the last game, it would probably be pretty damn crazy. But moving on, we did have a little bit more football news involving our teams this week. It's news that makes me very happy. The New England Patriots have opted into having an offense next year in hiring former Bama coordinator and former New England Patriots coordinator, Bill O'Brien. He's back on the team. We finally have somebody for the first time since Josh McDaniels who is coming in and has run a competent offense for this team before. Mac was quoted today saying he's pumped to have Billy O in the building. I think that's going to be such a positive force for the team and for the offense. But it also comes back to the question, like, that's a hire you could have made a year ago easily. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing really changed. He had the same job and you had the same vacancy a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just another situation that points to last year being just a complete waste for the Patriots. I said that as soon as the final whistle blew on the season, that you not only did you not do well, not only did you not make the playoffs, not only did you not play up to your potential, but you didn't even take steps that you could have this year to find out what you really have in a lot of these guys. You didn't get anybody competently coaching the special teams. You didn't have a great offensive line coach, which if you look at when the Patriots succeed, they generally have a great mind leading the offensive line. Like, we haven't won a Super Bowl since Dante Scarnecchia started running the O-line for the Patriots. And first and foremost, we didn't have an offensive coordinator. We didn't have anybody who could come out and really squeeze the potential out of our personnel. And now that we do, I'm not only looking forward to how he's going to help develop Mac and how a little bit more modernized. I know Bill O'Brien isn't the most modernized approach you could take to the offense. Mm-hmm. My number one candidate, as you know, I've said it on the podcast, is no longer available as Cliff Kingsbury is off riding elephants in Thailand and is not going to be coaching any football next year, it seems. So if you can't have Cliff, Bill was my number two option to come in and lead this offense. He's worked with Tom. He's worked with great Patriot offenses before. And I'm just really excited to see him bring the most out of Mac, hopefully get guys like Janu and Kendrick Bourne involved in the offense a lot more, and just see, because we haven't had someone competent at the controls since Bill went on that spending spree and added, you know, so many guys to that offense, receivers and tight ends, none of whom are true number ones outside of, I think, Hunter Henry. I think that's probably one of the more exciting portions, because Hunter Henry looked like a top five tight end in the league at times, even under Matt Patricia. I think he has the potential to really go out there and earn that number one tight end spot. Maybe the number one, like, most trusted weapon Mac has.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just excited for everybody, man. Ramondre hopefully going to take another step forward. With the offense being a little bit more varied, it just bodes well for everybody. And I think now that you have an offensive coordinator, even if you don't go out and add a number one like a DeAndre Hopkins, which I still think it would be in their best interest to do, but now that you have an offensive coordinator, this is going to be a huge year for Mac. He's in his number three season. He has an offensive coordinator. He's probably going to have more tools to succeed than he's ever had in his career going into this year. And I think, I still think the number one receiver is a real requirement if you're going to say this is the year we find out who Mac really is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at least a step in the right direction. And I think we're going to learn a lot about the DNA of this team next year with him at the helm of the offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I think it's a good hiring for you guys, given, you know, the options out there at the moment. And it's like, it's a name that people are familiar about, so it's going to make people feel comfortable. And he has had some success. And I think as long as you keep him out of your front office and GM or head coach, I think you're fine. So like, I think Bill's ceiling is offensive coordinator. I think that's his happy zone. But I do think it hamstrings you in getting DeAndre Hopkins, because he did trade him away in Houston. And I think there was a little bit of philosophy issues there. So I don't know about how that relationship's gonna flow, and if they even want to rekindle that. That ship might have already sailed. And two, it you know, this is a hiring that we usually like complain about, because it's kind of just like recycling the guys you know and sticking to the tree that and the philosophy that you guys that Bill's developed, and sticking to what you know, and kind of like if you want to have a little bit of a change, sometimes that gets in the way of it. So like that's my only issue with it. But I mean, I think it's hard to go wrong with anything not named Matt Patricia.
Yeah. I mean, when your last offensive coordinator wasn't an offensive coordinator.
Exactly.
An offensive coordinator will certainly help.
So
yeah, so that's going to be a big move for the Pats, man. I'm excited that they're finally admitting that mistake and starting to move forward a little bit from it, even if it was kind of a craft forced move, which is what it's appearing to be. I don't know if Belichick comes to this conclusion on his own. For some reason, even though he's a great objective football mind, I can't help but feel that if Bill and Kraft didn't have that sit down as soon as the season ended, that this wouldn't have come as fast, if at all. So that's it still is a little disconcerting for Bill being the head coach. It certainly doesn't help the qualms of the game has passed him by that a lot of people love to come out and say, myself included at times, for sure. But yeah, overall, just a great move forward. It's a familiar face, so I guess it kind of still stays in the Bill only does things that he's comfortable with move. But as far as those moves go, it's a great one. Let's see. We do have, so we'll put a cap on the weekend of football games. Mm-hmm. We do, it's tangential to B2G because it's in the NFC East, but we got to talk about the Cowboys. I mean, we simply have to talk about the Cowboys.
We do. We're in America, and they're for some reason still America's team, even though they let down America every single year.
Right. So we go into this game. We know that the Cowboys are outmatched in a lot of areas by the 49ers, who have
Dallas's roster. They got players.
Well,
they have players on their squad. They have a full 57, 53. Mm-hmm.
Well, the Niners are better at every offensive skill position. They might not be quite as good on defense, but they certainly show up defensively. And
yeah, no, I give you that. Yeah, outmatch for sure.
So they come into this game, San Francisco being one of the only instances in the NFL, the only teams that shows you, if you figure out everything else, your quarterback play can be only okay and you can be an elite team. Mm-hmm. Which, over the last 10, especially the last 5 years in the NFL, that simply hasn't been true. The elite teams have their quarterback situation figured out with an elite player, and that's pretty much the end of the story. But San Francisco comes in. They have the best roster in the National Football League. Brock Purdy has been playing well enough to utilize all of those weapons and get them up to at or near their potential. But the Cowboys are on a heater. They absolutely decimated their wild card game. Coming into divisional week, I think people were feeling better about the Cowboys than they have maybe since Dak and Zeke's breakout year in 2015. When they won 14 games that year. They didn't make the NFC Championship that year either, obviously. But coming in, if you look at it, maybe if I put myself in Jerry Jones's shoes for a second and I look at this team and I say, this is maybe the most complete Cowboys team since like post Y2K, like front to back, like they've always had playmakers here and there, but on this team, I mean, honestly, your most questionable position might be quarterback, like on the entire team. Like your defense has been your strong suit this year. You have Tony Pollard, who's come out and established himself as the RB1. You have Zeke coming in behind him. CeeDee Lamb has made himself into a number one as well. It's like a very, very complete team, which is not something we're used to seeing from the Cowboys.
Even Schultz has taken steps forward this year, like even from tight end, which is like kind of just a bonus. You don't necessarily need your tight end being a ringer, but you know, it helps having another hand in the fight.
But it puts teams over the top. Like if you, I mean, there are three elite tight ends in the NFL.
Yeah. Like
three,
two,
you could argue two. One, honestly, like Kittle's production is good, but like, it might just be Kelsey.
It's easily Kelsey over everybody else. And like, I'd maybe throw in Kittle, there too.
Yeah.
With his blocking, but
yeah. But if you have a pass catching tight end that can go in and get you some red zone touchdowns, that helps substantially. The Patriots offense would have been somehow even worse in the red zone if they didn't have Hunter Henry. So it definitely makes a huge difference. Dalton Schultz is one of those guys who he's not going to make a lot of headlines after the game, but while you're watching the game, you're going to hear his name quite a bit. So just to set that scene, you have one of the more complete Cowboys teams we've seen in a very long time. They're coming out. And I don't think anybody expected this game to be. I mean, would you call that game one-sided?
It was like the closest one-sided game.
That's kind of how I was thinking.
You know,
too.
Like it's not necessarily one-sided, but it was like the entire time the Niners were in the driver's seat.
That's kind of what I was getting back to. Did it ever feel like that game was in doubt?
Not really, just but I mean, like the whole time it was the Niners were driving and the Cowboys were kind of like, all right, like let me take the wheel. Like you're annoying like cousin who just got their license and you're like, nah, you're not ready for this shit. Like,
sure.
We're on the highway. You only do around town shit. But yeah, I mean, they just are awesome chokers. And I've thought this for a while, but I mean, Dak is just incredibly mid, in my opinion. And Dan, did you see the tweet that the Cowboys tweeted out?
Which one?
So they like went for Dak Prescott's head. This is the
Cowboys account did?
Cowboys account. I'll read it out verbatim because it's pretty crazy. Let me just pull it up. So they say Dak Prescott gave the ball away twice in a narrow loss to the 49ers in a matchup the Cowboys had a chance to win if they didn't again generate self-inflicted wounds. This is at Dallas Cowboys tweeted this out. Like, not only did they get one jab at Dak in there, but like two, they followed it up with the shooting themselves in the foot at the end. Like, I mean, does he deserves to get this, the bash that he's been getting. And the Cowboys are just gonna cowboy, I guess. But I mean, they're just frauds every year.
And Tom,
I think the frustration shows in that tweet how people in Texas are fans, the organization, they're all a little fed up because like what I think they're feeling with the Bills now, it's like, we have a good roster, why do we keep losing every year? You know? But I mean, they don't help themselves out because every year they think they're going to the Super Bowl.
Tom, do you remember the first day you drove on the highway?
Yeah, I do. I don't like remember specifically the day, but I do remember it being like very intimidating and like, but like as soon as I like merged, I was good. You know, I was like, I was just a little iffy with the merge, but I like kind of, I think I selected like an exit to get on that I knew like would be pretty good and straight away, because there's some gnarly merges in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
But the one going, I think I merged going north on 95 right in Norwalk at like exit 16. That one's just a pretty good straightaway and you could see it all the way through. So like the analytic person that I am, I was like, all right, I'm going to kind of plan it out to kind of make myself be successful and kind of alleviate the anxiety, that kind of stuff. But yeah, sure. It was one of those things. Once I did it, it was fine. Definitely more built up in my head than it was.
So my dad had to trick me to get me on the highway for the first time.
Really?
Yeah. So we're doing the same thing. Like we're driving around town. We would go out for driving lessons like once or twice a week. I would drag him out after dinner to like drive around on like some super quiet roads like near my house. And then one day, I'm like a couple months in, we had only like done laps like around the same neighborhood, like navigated some different stuff. And then he basically, like, I forget what on-ramp it was on, but it was something where he like could have relatively gotten away with sneaking me onto it. So he says, like, just make a right up here. So I make the right, and then it starts like doing like the curve that an on-ramp does.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what are we doing? He's like, just take it easy, bring it up to speed, like just stay in control. I was like, mm-hmm. Okay. But yeah, most people kind of just like have that day where they're like, I'm ready. But mm-hmm. my dad just, I guess, believed in me more than I believed in myself and got me.
Great parenting right there. That's a great trick. I want to see like the honor, because it's very difficult to confuse someone to go on the highway of all things. You know what I mean? Like it's very interesting how like he got you to get on there without like backing out and everything. Like shout out Papa Emmons. Like,
I'm not sure how he did it. I have to re-ask him what the on-ramp was so I can like go and like Google Street View it.
Yeah.
Like how the fuck did he do that?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like well done. I don't know if there wasn't many signs like 95 North this way that were visible, or you're just like a new driver and so focused on the road ahead that you miss like the sign type of thing. But no, that's the way to do it. It's kind of like when you go skydiving and they jump on two instead of, or jump on one instead of two, so people don't hold.
All right, we're gonna call my dad.
Cool.
This is the second time one of my parents has made it onto the show because they were a topic of conversation. So let's see if old Len Evans picks up here.
Let's see. What is he doing at 4:44 on a Tuesday?
Exactly.
You know, probably working.
Exactly that. But I guess we'll see.
But what is work?
Hi, this is Len.
Oh, nothing.
Ah.
But as you can see, he's a big. Oh, now my mom's calling me back.
No, whoa.
Okay, what's this about? Hello?
Hello. Dad's on the phone with
the
customer.
Oh, okay. So, hi, Mom. You're on the podcast right now.
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Emmons.
Anita Emmons making her second B2G appearance. This yeah, time, that's right. Relatively unsolicited. But we were talking about the time that Dad tricked me into driving on the highway for the first time.
Oh, I wasn't there for that.
No, I know. but
I heard the story, but I wasn't there for that.
So I just told the story on the show, and I wanted to call Dad, and Tom was very curious as to how he did it. And I don't remember what on-ramp he picked out or like how he managed to pull off that move. But we...
Hold on. Can you hold for 2 seconds and I will get him and he can clarify that for you?
We'll be here. Yes.
She's an MVP, man.
Okay. Hold, please.
Okay. We'll do. I'll call you back. Or you call me back. Oh. Okay. All right.
She's
cool.
Hold. Yeah, and with the hold, please. Like,
oh, there he is. Hey, Dad. What's up?
Sir.
Good. Dad, you're on the podcast.
All right.
So
I feel official.
Yes. Tom sends his regards. And I just had a quick question. I actually had a Len Emmons story come up on the show this week. We somehow got on the topic of driving on the highway for the first time. And okay. do you remember how you tricked me into getting onto the highway? What on-ramp that was? What did you do to pull that off?
It was the on-ramp that connects Federal Road to 84.
Okay.
And we were out practicing driving. The two or three times before we were out prior to that, I tried to get you to get on the highway and you just wouldn't do it.
Yep.
So...
Cautious man.
That looked like a highway, you wouldn't go there, so I had to bring you on the federal roadway that would intersect with NJ84.
Oh, okay.
That way you weren't aware of what was going on, and once you were on the ramp, you were committed.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a good driving history since.
Yes, yeah, so
it all worked out.
I mean, looking back, like, great move. I'm probably going to steal that for my kids one day. I just did not have any recollection of how you pulled that off. But I remember you tricking me into it so vividly that I was like, how does one even make that happen?
I remember your knuckles went white.
Yep, big time.
You were ready to pull over to the side of the road. And I said, there's nowhere to pull over. You got to just step on it and keep on going. And you did it.
There's a good life lesson in there somewhere.
There is.
You that was reluctant to get on the highway.
Uh-huh.
Then it was your little sister that her second session out was begging me to get on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
So I got, I had two different doses of that whole experience, but
and you ended up with two different drivers.
Yeah different driver, that's for sure.
Oh boy,
you know.
Oh god. Well,
mother didn't like the highway until about 3 years ago, so listen, she'll give, do you want a brief story from her?
You know what? If we're going down this rabbit hole, why not? I mean, we're okay. Yeah. What you got? What you got for us?
Okay, hold on.
Oh, he's bringing her in.
I think your listeners are waiting to hear from me. That's what I think.
Okay. Well, make it worth their while.
Okay. So I did not drive on the highway. Since we're talking about highways, I did not drive on the highway until after you were born.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was so scared because in my head, when you got on the highway went everywhere. So if I got on the highway and didn't know where I was going, I could end up like in Minnesota or something. So that scared me in my head.
So you were in your mid-30s, still scared of major roadways?
It was mid-20s. It wasn't that bad.
You said after I was born.
Yeah, I was 25 when you were born. 26.
You were... Not 26.
I was pregnant. I was there.
I know.
So was
you
I.
You were almost 30.
I was 27 when you were born. I was 26 when I was pregnant with you and 27 when you were born. So there was a day.
Okay.
Dad was working in New Haven and the truck broke down.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I think, in Newtown. And he needed me to come get him. And the only way to get to Newtown that I knew of at the time was to get on the highway. So you were still an infant. So I put you in the infant seat. And at that point, there was really no safety rules. So I put you in the front seat next to me.
Oh, God.
Rear facing.
Uh-huh.
Look, at that point, it was very impressive that you were even in a seat.
Okay, this is 1997, not 1958.
I understand that, but it wasn't a big thing.
It wasn't a whole big thing keeping the children secure.
No,
wasn't a whole big craze yet.
No, you were in a car seat and you were rear facing, and I buckled you in the front seat and I moved the front seat forward so that you were wedged between the dashboard and the seat. You were perfectly safe, but you were next to me and you gave me comfort.
Who are you trying to convince, Mom?
And we no, it's true.
Me or you?
And you and I drove to Newtown, which is not that far, but for me it was far at that point, and got your dad because he was broken down on the highway. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I ever drove on the highway, which was at 27 years old. Well,
so it's pretty much the same story.
What
like
do you mean?
Just not being ready or wanting to drive on the highway, but guess what? You're driving on the highway.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So you and I had similar experiences. There you go.
Right. I was 17 and you were
27.
Yep. Different strokes, you know? All right. Well, thank you for your insight. Congrats on being a multiple time B2G alumnus now, Mom. Congratulations.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Do I get a trophy?
We can look into a trophy.
Is there a certificate of some sort?
I mean, I gave you a sticker that you never put anywhere, so you can use that.
No, I have it. I have it in my office.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll get you something.
Okay, cool.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for the highway stories. We'll talk to you later.
All right, honey. Love you.
Love you too.
Bye.
Well, that was 20 minutes of highway talk with Dan's parents on the B2G program.
I feel like we got to debrief that a little bit. I feel like there was a lot of learning lessons there. I feel like we learned that if your last name is Emmons, don't even worry about like, okay, we're going to do just throw them onto the highway. That's the mm-hmm. only way they're going to learn.
Real sink or swim type family,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's like kind of a greater metaphor for life there. It's like, you know what? Like most of the stuff that you're afraid of is just all made up nonsense in your head. Go out there, go do it.
I was kind of getting at that on the phone too. Like all the big stuff in life, you're never going to feel ready. You just got to do it.
Just dive in both feet.
Yep. Well, if we leave you with anything on this week's episode of the Between Two Gardens show, it is that you're never going to feel ready for the big things in life. But if you don't throw yourself in and embrace it at full speed, life's just going to pass you by the way football passed Bill Belichick by. So get out there this week. Do the things that you've been putting off that you feel like you're not ready to do. Because guess what? You're never going to be this young again. You're never going to be this spry again. You're never going to be this. Oh, I only thought of two adjectives.
Yeah, you got to round it out.
Oh, I only thought of two adjectives. You're never going to be this spry. You're never going to be this. My mind went squirrely. Let's go with squirrely.
Bushy-tailed. You
know, yeah, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Yeah, I think that's the squirrel metaphor I was looking for. And yeah. My brain said, here's the other one.
That's why you got me.
Yeah. And I know there's only two squirrel metaphors to pick from, but guess literally. What, buddy? You picked the wrong, you flipped the coin and you lost. Sorry. Sorry about it.
Blind squirrel doesn't find a nut every...
No, they don't. They don't. Sometimes they're just blind squirrels.
Sometimes they're just blind squirrels.
Just blind squirrels.
But don't put a blind squirrel on the highway.
No. Please. No. Yeah.
Don't do that.
A blind squirrel is sadly never going to be ready to drive on the highway.
No, they will never find that nut.
No, they will never. That's sad. I just gave that whole motivational speech. And maybe there's a blind squirrel out there listening saying, I'm going to drive on the highway one day.
And we just shatter that poor guy's dreams.
Now I'm sad.
They only say you can't do it until it's done. So please, Blind Squirrel, prove us wrong. I want to be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You do you, Blind Squirrel.
Yep, within the parameters of traffic laws, preferably. But also, maybe not. Maybe some rules are meant to be broken. Maybe some... It's impossible until it's done mindset, like you said.
You know?
Well, if you're out there feeling like a blind squirrel this week, just know that someday with enough grit and enough hard work and enough brain power and enough dedication, you too can drive on the highway. We'll see you next week.
Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series. This time Manning going deep for Beckham Jr.